Hello, this is Paul Solentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. We have Sean Johnson, former Wichita State baseball player. Sean is now scouting director for the Minnesota Twins, so he is a topical guest with Minnesota's AA team coming to play in Riverfront Stadium, I guess, in the spring, we all hope. We all have our fingers crossed. Sean is a South High graduate. He played catcher for the Shockers from 1996 to 98. So, Sean, you played on the 96 College World Series team. You played on the 98 team that just bashed the ball all over stadiums around the country. A lot of major leaguers, a lot of professional players came out of that era. How did that, being on those teams, how did those experiences shape your career in professional baseball?
Well, I'd start with the coaching staff, being around Gene and Brent Chemnitz and Jim Thomas and guys like that, really showed me the importance of being organized and being diligent and having a game plan, and really about being competitive. Which, you know, this is Major League Baseball is a very competitive business. And I think I've carried some of those things over that I learned from those guys in the way I lead and move our staff forward. But we really talk about competitiveness and players that we scout. That's kind of the number one thing. If you had to boil it down, when you're drafting a player and investing money, you want to make sure they're going to compete and you want to make sure they love the game. And so I go back a lot, all the time, really, to my teammates that I had at Wichita State starting in 96. I mean, guys like Braden Looper and Casey Blake, who were extremely talented guys, but they had the makeup to match it. They had the drive, the work ethic, the feel to play the game, that was just elite. So to be in the dugout with guys like that, and then going on to 98, we had first rounders, you know, we had all kinds of guys in all parts of the draft that were really, really talented, from, Zach Sorensen, Kevin Hooper, Nate Robertson, Ben Christensen, you name it, guys with really elite talent and the makeup to match it, that allowed those guys to get, to the big leagues. And, I always reflect on the way they went about their work habits and the way we worked in the weight room together. And there's a really common denominator with all the guys that have gotten to the big leagues from Wichita State or really anywhere. They were talented and skilled, but they also had the determination and the resilience to get to the big leagues, because it's a hard road and a lot of guys don't make it, but those guys were equipped to do it. And I think just the culture we had in those days, I mean, it was just a lot of fun because we knew we put a lot of hard work in and we had talent to match that, and it took us a long way.
I believe you came in thinking maybe you wanted to be a coach. Tell us about that, maybe journey from coaching into scouting. How did that unfold?
Yeah, I think I had those guys left such a strong impression on me, the coaching staff there, that I thought that's something I really wanted to do. And probably a side effect was I spent so much time in the dugout and the bullpen. I really got a joy out of seeing my teammates get better and improve. And so I think I carried that over into maybe going down the coaching road, and probably collegiately is where I wanted to start, and maybe just to become like Gene and Brent and JT, guys like that. So really the scouting thing, I was the ops guy there for almost 2 years, and I was just fortunate the timing wise that David Chad, fellow Wichita native, he offered me a job with the Marlins, and I hadn't really considered scouting or professional baseball. I've been exposed to a lot of scouts being the ops guy, because they would come through the office a lot and I had some interactions with them. But I was just lucky that David Chad and Jimmy Ruff, who was the area scout in the Midwest at the time for the Marlins, who I worked for first, gave me an opportunity, and it's just been a blessing ever since.
How many times did you throw out Randy Young during a scrimmage at X Stadium?
Oh, I threw him out once, and I can still remember the sun was out. It was like the greatest day of my life, the fact that I actually threw him out, because nobody really threw him out. He must have fell down and got back up. That's probably the only way I would have thrown him out, but it happened, and I can still remember it vividly. But it was just once.
Just once. That's more than a lot of catchers. I always have to, when I when I have these throwback mentions, I always have to go back and mention for people who were not around back then, Randy Young was, I don't know if he is the all-time or the career base stolen base leader of Wichita State, but he is definitely up there, just a fast, fast human being.
Yeah, he's still to this day one of the fastest people I've ever seen. Maybe Byron Buxton's faster and a handful of other guys, but he is right up in there. It was amazing to watch the things he did. I've still never seen a guy score from first base on a hit and run in a gap, ball in the gap, and he scored. That was at UC Santa Barbara one year. That was the most mind-blowing thing any of us had ever seen.
He was quite the athlete, no doubt. We've got a lot of people at Wichita State, a lot of students at Wichita State, sport management, those kind of fields who are thinking about a career in athletics, thinking about a career in professional sports. Hit us with a piece of advice or two if you were a young person thinking about that direction.
Well, I think the biggest piece of advice is just be willing to do anything to get your foot in the door. When the biggest thing, if you don't have experience, is you got to try to get it somewhere. So whether that's interning or taking a job that you may not want to do out of the chute, you need to be able to get in and show people what you can do. So I think most sporting industries, it is a, you know, it's a word of mouth business. It's not so much the resume. It is people skills and work ethic and all those things. So if you can show somebody what you can do, you know, things will happen and the game will kind of show you where you can go and how far you can go. But getting your foot in the door and just be willing to do anything to do that and fighting for that, I think, is rule number one.
You are known as just a fabulous cook. Your family loves it when you come home for holidays, I'm told, because you do the cooking and you do a great job. Do you have a favorite new dish maybe that you've discovered that you would recommend to other cooks out there?
My wife's favorite lately is we've done it's like a balsamic glazed meatloaf. Meatloaf doesn't sound sexy on the surface, but it's got a bunch of vegetables in it and a nice glaze. And then I keep doing the cilantro pesto mashed potatoes. Those are kind of still a favorite. So been working on my pasta game a little. My shrimp scampi is pretty good at this point, but that's still a work in progress.
Did you have more time during the pandemic to work on these kind of things?
I guess I did. I mean, we have a 2-month-old daughter, Sloan, right now. And so my wife's been pregnant or we've had a child throughout the entire pandemic. So a lot of time in the kitchen, making meals, keeping everybody fed. So I would say yes. I mean, normally I'm on the road, you know, 120 days of the year and I might've been gone 7 this year. So at least since the middle of March. And so it's been nice to be home and I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. You talked about evaluating baseball players and, you know, do they compete? Do they love the game? What's their makeup? That has to be to large part an in-person kind of thing. Not a lot of in-person baseball during the pandemic. How did the pandemic change your job and how the Twins went about evaluating talent?
Yeah, so we got off to a good start. We had about 5 or 6 weeks of college baseball. And so, you know, the college guys you have a little bit more familiarity with because you've seen them for, you know, 2 years leading up to their junior year. So you have a little history and a lot of those guys we know back into high school. So that group is a little easier to make sense of. The thing that the demographic we really struggled with was and the industry struggled with was the high school players, especially the northern climate prospects who were just getting out of the gym, had maybe only thrown once or twice if they were pitchers. And some guys, you know, we didn't even get to. So you had to go off a lot of other things, which we are lucky to have now, things like video and data information and those kind of things to supplement your opinions. So it was obviously a challenge, but we basically came off the road in the middle of March, and what we found was everybody was just sitting at home and sitting still. So we were able to connect with a lot of coaches across the country about their players and talk to a lot of people who knew these players really well. So we really tried to keep our background work tightened up on the players we were going to spend a lot of money on. And, you know, we only had 4 picks. We lost our third rounder because we signed Josh Donaldson. So it was a really short draft and we only had 4 picks. We tried to make them count. And we feel like we did a really nice job adapting and overcoming the situation. And so we had a virtual draft where it was the first time we've ever done that. And so a lot of technology went into that, a lot of research. We were lucky that the NFL had gone before us with their draft. So we picked the brains of the Vikings up here and probably seven or eight other NFL teams to see what went well and what didn't go well. So we were really set up for success. And, you know, it's a lot of people that put in a lot of time to make sure it went off without a hitch. But we thought we had a successful draft.
Yeah, from the technology or the extra time to do background work, anything come out of these last 7 or 8 months that you think maybe you'll look back on and say, well, that was helpful. We need to keep that part of it, you know, going forward.
Yeah. Well, I think first starting with our staff, we were able to, some of our scouts, I may see some of those guys 7 or 10 days a year, you know, and we're in the same park, in the same stadium, watching the same game. So to be able to, we were connecting on a weekly basis. So we this winter we've, you know, instituted some, we have 4 regions across the country. So we have regional meetings where all our guys get on the Zoom, and it's just nice to have that face-to-face interaction and stay connected. So it's really helped us internally communicate at a higher level and prepare for the year. But also the, you know, video, we have so much video. I can watch, you know, 3 years of a player's at bats in college at the click of a button. So to be able to go see those extra days that I'm not at the park watching the player, it really helps you build conviction and belief in your opinion on the player.
You always hear the stories about coaches or scouts saying, you know, you want to see, you know, how are they interacting with teammates in the dugout, or what are they doing before the game? Those kind of things. Do those kind of things still remain a really essential part of what you do?
Yeah, I think, you know, technology has kind of invaded the scouting community. And I think it really at the highest level, the major leagues, even AAA, we don't really have scouts covering those leagues. And when I started, that was like the dream job, is to be a major league scout where you're in a big league park every year, every day of the year. And now we don't have any of our scouts in major league stadiums that often. So, but as it gets back to the amateur market, you're just always going to need human beings to help, you know, dig deeper and give you a better sense of who the player is, how they're wired, like you said, how they get off the bus and how they interact with their teammates, things you just can't see on video. You just have to have that sense and that feel for the player to invest the kind of money that we're doing.
Wichita is now a Twins town to a certain degree. They had a lot of changes in minor league baseball over the last year or so, and the Wichita Wind Surge will be the double A affiliate for the Twins. Twins on a good run. They went 36-24 in 2020. They won the AL Central, got to the playoffs. Second straight season in the playoffs. You've been in the playoffs 3 of the past 4. Wasn't too long ago, 2016, that the Twins were not very good. 103 loss season. Tell us a little bit about how that the organization has rebounded.
Yeah, I guess it goes back to the summer of 2016 when we had a change in leadership at the top. We have Derek Falvey, who's our president of operations, and Thad Levine, who's our general manager. Those guys really came in and changed the culture significantly, and we've added so many more people and resources. I think just going 4 years back, there's been such a huge push in player development to be able, and there's so many tools now with the technology to enhance players' performance, and you know, and we've really done a great job of that. So we've moved to that. We're probably in the top 5 analytically in the league. We've got a huge research and development department. So we're trying to make better decisions across the board, whether it's free agency, waiver claims, the draft, and in the future, the international draft. So I think it starts with those two guys. I think the culture of our team, you know, it was a really difficult decision for them to not bring back Paul Molitor, who had, you know, was manager of the year in 2017, to change and go with Rocco Baldelli as our manager. He's really changed the culture and the vibe that's going on in our clubhouse. So I think in a positive way, not that Molly did a bad job. Obviously he had some nice years there, but I think our culture's in a good spot. And just, again, we've really invested in people across the board in a lot of departments. We had a really small infrastructure in our front office, and it's really, I'm not sure how much bigger it is now. It's at least tripled in size. But I think we've kind of gone from, you know, when I started working for the Twins in 2002, we were kind of the blueprint of the in the industry. We were not a huge market team, but we had good drafts and we had good people and great leadership. And then all of a sudden, and you know, we became dinosaurs. I think we just didn't change. We didn't evolve. For the stability that got us so far kind of slowed us down. But now we feel like we're back up to speed with the industry, and it's really a fun place to work. It always has been. I really love being a Twin.
Yeah, that analytics part of it might be interesting for people. I'm not sure fans are clued in on the investment. What can you tell us as far as, yeah, how many people do you have that their job is under analytics? And I guess my vision would be they're sitting in front of a computer all day, but how do you describe kind of that part of it that maybe fans aren't as familiar with?
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of different, our research and development department's probably got about, we had probably one person 5 years ago. We probably have 25 now. So a lot of our analysts that are building models and doing a lot of things, some of those guys are face-to-face and interacting with the players at the major league level, the minor league level. And the key, I think, with the analytics, and it's a big term, is, you know, you can have all this information you want, but the key is relaying that messaging to the player to show the player that if you change these things in your delivery or your grip on your curveball or your pitch mix as a pitcher or your swing path as a hitter, you can have better results. So it's just it's a great coaching tool. So you need players we need to draft players who are into that. But most of the players now that we're getting to, the analytics and the information's been out there long enough that they're pretty schooled and they can kind of speak the language already. But it's amazing at the big league level how much we can impact those players, because at the end of the day, they're there to make money and get the free agency and extend their career. So you've gone from the initial resistance to, hey, I've done it this way my whole life, I'm good, to, yeah, I'll listen to that, because if I can lower my ERA a run, then I can get a better ARB contract or a free agency contract. So it's really embedded. It's part of what baseball is going to be for a long time. And like I said, there's still going to be that balancing act between all the information and then funneling that to the player to make them become a better player.
So if you are a Wichita State student who wants to get into baseball analytics, what's the background? Are these former baseball players? Are they more, you know, statistics, engineering backgrounds? What's maybe a career path?
Yeah, I mean, we have a job fair. We hold at Target Field every year, and I'll go down and stand the line for, you know, amateur scouting, and I might talk to a couple people that come through, and then I look over and the line for research and development is around the corner, you know. So it's a lot of engineering, mathematical degrees. The people that are trying to get internships every year for the Twins, I mean, I get to be a part of that a little bit, and their degrees and their resumes are just super impressive. If I was trying to get in now, I'd have no shot, right? So having that background is definitely a positive thing to have, whether you're into building models or you're into research and the science part of that. There's all kinds of different ways to broach that.
Interesting. Who's the favorite former Twin who still is around the ballpark, around the Minneapolis area that you interact with?
Well, it's tough to pick one. I would probably say I'm really lucky that I get to see Tony Oliva, who's a living legend, you know, should be in the Hall of Fame. He'll just pop into the office and come by and say hello. And he's just a tremendous guy and just a great warm spirit about him. And I love seeing him. So he's probably one. And I mean, Justin Morneau lives in the area, and he's a tremendous guy, awesome guy. And all of our guys that, you know, I get to see Torii Hunter quite a bit. I mentioned Morneau. LaTroy Hawkins is just as good as it gets. Michael Kadire, same. And those guys don't live in town, but they work for the team as special assistants. So those guys will be in the draft room with us and they'll pitch in and they'll do whatever you ask, you know, for them to do, to look at some tape or evaluate a swing. So I pick those guys' brains as much as I can, because obviously their resumes as players are just immaculate, and they're just awesome people to boot.
Double A baseball, describe it for us.
Well, I think Double A, I always describe that as, if you see a minor league player at a Double A park, they are extremely talented and they've got skill to match that. Now they're on the doorstep to the major leagues. And when you see those guys in Double A, which is my personal favorite level to scout, I've scouted everything from instruction league and the rookie league to the big leagues. And I always love going to Double A game because all the players there are good and they're skilled and they've got a chance to get to the big leagues. And most of them are younger players that's where most of the better prospects in any organization are going to be if they're close to the major league. So if you go out to the stadium in Wichita next summer, you're seeing guys who are going to be in the big leagues for the next 5 or 10 years, hopefully. Now they're not all prospects. No level of a play has that, but you can't just get to Double A by accident. You've got to have done something at the lower levels to show the player development system that you work for, that you're a talented player. So those players are kind of just in that finishing school where if they can thrive there and do well, and if you're a pitcher, you're throwing the ball with the plate. If you're a hitter and you're not striking out and you're doing all the things you're supposed to be doing, you're not far from the big league. So for me, it's exciting. I love Double A baseball, and I think fans in Wichita should be super excited about that. I think the contrast between Triple A and Double A, because I know some fans were expecting a Triple A team. I'm not going to poo-poo the Triple A level, but it basically is a roster that turns over every year. It's basically a team that supplements the major league teams. If a guy goes down, a lot of the guys on that Triple A team can go up to the big leagues and contribute for a smaller period of time. It's not a guy, it's usually a player that is talented, has probably played in the big leagues, but not very long, has been kind of up and down. And so sometimes you go out to the Triple A parks and you see guys who have been in Triple A for 10 years. They're 36 years old. They've played 100 games in the big leagues, but they're behind Mike Trout, or they're behind some other player who's just better than them, but they're still making a paycheck. And they're still earning a living, and those guys are grinding it out. I think Double A, you're seeing the young bucks who are hungry for the big leagues. So I think the pace of play is better. Just the intent that they play with on a daily basis, because they're trying to earn that 40 man spot. Because some of the guys in Double A are either on the 40 man or will be on it. So once they get to that 40 man roster, and you see guys on the roster when you go out to the park that are on the 40 man, those are the better players we have. And those are the guys you're going to probably see in the big leagues going forward.
What's the percentage of people that maybe skip or mostly skip Triple A that are just going right from Double A to the big leagues?
Ooh, I don't want to, let's see. I would say it's probably at least 50%. There might be, it just probably depends on the organization's philosophy. You don't really need to go to Triple A and dominate anymore before you go to the big leagues. You see guys moving quickly now, more so than probably 20, 30 years ago, where it was go to A ball, dominate, go to Double A, do well there, go to Triple A and season yourself, and then maybe we'll call you to the big leagues. Now it's, if you can thrive at Double A, you can probably go right to the big leagues and hold, tread water. A lot of guys will go up and you're probably going to see them come back down. Not many players just go up and stay, like a Mike Trout or a Joe Mauer. A lot of guys will go up and certainly come back down multiple times, because it's all our big league guys will tell you, it's harder to stay in the big leagues than to get there.
Give us a few names. Who should Wichita baseball fans maybe be excited about the prospects of seeing this summer?
Yeah, it'll be interesting, I think, with the timeline to see who actually shows up and who doesn't. But I think the guy I'm hoping that Wichita gets to hang out with for a few months is Royce Lewis, who was our first round pick in 2017. Tremendous athlete, tremendous shortstop. I guess tremendous ceiling as a offensive player. He can hit, he has power, he can really run, and he's going to make some great plays at short. Just an awesome kid from Orange County, great family, and I texted him the other day. I'm hoping he gets to stop into Wichita and meet some of my people there. So
I did extensive research, and by that I mean I typed in Minnesota Twins top prospects. Let me throw another couple names at you, and sure, you tell me if maybe they'll be around. There's a pitcher, Jordan, I'm scared to pronounce his last
name. Yeah, Balazovic. Yeah.
Balazovic.
A lot of people butcher that one. Yeah. I would bet he probably shows up there to start as well. He's a Canadian high school pitcher that we took 2016 draft. Mid-90s fastball, good breaking ball. One of our starters, future starters down the road. And I think that's one thing to highlight is, you know, we probably don't have the Clayton Kershaw coming down the pipeline, but we have a really good, solid, stable of starting pitching candidates that will either start in Cedar Rapids, which is just below Wichita, or right there in Wichita. I think Matt Canarino is a candidate to start in Double A. But if he doesn't start the year there, I'd imagine he'd end up there. He's a really exciting guy to watch, our second rounder from 2019.
I ran across a baseball term that I'm not familiar with in looking at this. Maybe you can help me out. It's about one of your pitchers. There is some concern that the head whack in delivery will limit his command. I've never heard the term head whack. What
you haven't?
I guess I could probably guess what that means, but
yeah, it's head whack is a scouting term used for when a pitcher throws. It's usually a reliever that does it. It's usually a guy trying to throw hard. He's either throwing hard or trying really hard to do it. But right at release, you'll see his head kind of bobble or wobble to the side. That's head whack. We got a lot of really, really fancy terms in scouting. That's one of them.
Okay. Excellent. So with the Twins here, Double A, does that mean you will be coming to Wichita more regularly? Is that part of your job that you bring you here?
Yeah, I think we've talked about, at least in the initial phases, as our player development people and teams come down there and get settled in Wichita, that I might make a trip down there for that to kind of introduce people and all that. So whatever I can do to get back, I always take every opportunity I can to come home, because Wichita's, I haven't lived in Wichita since 2002, but it's always home to me.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos, no good. 1 second, it's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.